Hello and welcome. I'm Dr. Jessica Ilani. On behalf of CME Outfitters, I would like to welcome you and thank you for joining us for today's CMEO briefcase entitled Managing Migraine in Primary Care and Women's Health Practice Settings. This activity is supported by an independent educational grant from AbbVie and Pfizer. I'm Dr. Jessica Ilani. I'm the director of the MedStar Georgetown Headache Center and a professor of clinical neurology at MedStar Georgetown University Hospital in Washington, D.C. I'm delighted to be joined today by my distinguished colleague and good friend. Would you like to introduce yourself, Dr. Hutchinson?
Thank you, Jessica. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Dr. Susan Hutchinson. I'm here in Southern California. My background is family medicine and women's health, but in recent years, I've gone back for extra training and now just do headache in my practice.
Thank you, Dr. Hutchinson. So let's take a moment to go through our learning objectives. So our first learning objective is to utilize validated screening tools and diagnostic aids to diagnose migraine in primary care and or women's health practice settings. Our second learning objective is to integrate knowledge of the role of calcitonin gene-related peptide, or CGRP, in migraine, and updated professional guidance into shared decision-making for acute treatment and prevention of episodic migraine with CGRP receptor antagonists. So now let's meet our patient, Cheyenne, who's presenting to her primary care provider.
Hello, Cheyenne. It's good to see you again. Let's talk about what's going on today. It looks like you've been having bad headaches.
Hi. Yes, I've had bouts of bad headaches on and off since my late teens. But I'm really just now getting around to coming to you about this. I know it's been a while since I've been here. When I was in high school, a doctor told me I had migraines.
No worries. I'm sorry you've had trouble. Have you ever taken any medication for headache or migraines before?
I think when I was younger, several years ago, my doctor at the time prescribed sumatriptan. I had a reaction to that one. It caused some tightness in my chest and it felt tingly. And then not long after that, I was prescribed. It started with an R. Maybe Rizatrip. It seemed to help some, but it made me really sleepy, so I could really only take it once I got home from class and work. And by the time I took it, the headache I had already started, and it was pretty bad.
I see. Rizatriptan. So that was several years ago. Have you been using anything to help since? Or have there been any periods when your headaches have seemed better or worse?
Yes, that's it. Yeah, I haven't had a prescription for any headaches in like 8 years. I felt like they just didn't help enough for me to keep paying for them. And sometimes I'd go several months without much issue. So I also wasn't convinced they were safe to be on long term. But recently it's been really bad and I've had to miss work some.
I see. Thank you for telling me that. Let me first just confirm a couple things from check-in, okay? I see that you are still taking the same oral contraceptive and escitalopram 10 milligrams for anxiety. That was filled by the nurse practitioner you saw recently. Are you taking any other medications, or have you had any other hospital visits or appointments other than that since we last saw each other the year before?
Nope. Honestly, I don't take those medications faithfully like I should. I haven't taken them in a few weeks. I'm not sure about a need for birth control right now, and my anxiety hasn't been bad, so I just wanted to try to get off of those.
All right. Thank you for letting me know. How would you describe the headache pain you've had recently?
So it usually happens every couple of days. It feels like a storm in my head and body, and even looking at light hurts. Most often I feel it happens when I'm out of balance with everything, you know, angry, upset, stressed. I'm spiritual, and sometimes I think it's something negative around me that I can't quite pinpoint. Some of them aren't as bad as others, and I can get through my day, although it does hurt.
I appreciate you telling me that. It helps me understand how disruptive and intense it is for you. Do you feel that those emotions you describe occur before it happens? And do you feel the pain all around your head, or is it on one side or the other?
It usually starts hurting on what seems like the left side, and then it can spread around to what seems like my whole head. I do feel like stress can happen before it, and then sometimes I just feel like it happens when I feel negatively in general.
I see. Is there going to try and help that works? Or any treatment or doctor or other person that you may have visited for help?
I do know a woman who is skilled with healing methods, and I went to see her last week. She recommended some calming meditations I can practice throughout the day, including mindful walks and prayer. I haven't had a migraine in several days, but I have a stressful work project coming up, and I'm worried that that is going to trigger it. I'm interested in medication that may work best for it, but I'm not really aware of what's out there and have some concerns about safety of medications.
Thank you. That is good to know for thinking about what we can do to help you.
Now that we've met Cheyenne, let's review the information and have some chats about additional information that we have for you. So Dr. Hutchinson, can you walk us through Cheyenne's case over the next two slides?
Absolutely, Jessica. Cheyenne is a 28-year-old Black female. She's presenting to Women's Health / Primary Care for recent bad headaches that have caused her to miss work. Cheyenne describes her pain as like a storm in her head and body, and looking at a light is painful. Most often occurs when she's feeling out of balance with everything. She could be angry, upset, or stressed. She says that she's spiritual, so she feels there's some kind of negativity around her that she can't quite pinpoint. Cheyenne says the headaches happen usually every few days. She says it used to be every few weeks, but now they've increased in the last couple of months. Says she now has headaches almost half the days in the month, so about 15 on average, with some of them being severe and resulting in inability to get tasks done. Her past medical history includes anxiety, history of bad headaches or migraines on and off since late teens. She notes that in high school, a doctor told her she had migraines. However, she had a previous reaction to sumatriptan. It caused chest tightness and a tingly feeling. She previously seemed to have success with rizatriptan, but it caused sleepiness. She has a stressful work project coming up, and she thinks that may trigger her headaches. Her vital signs are normal. You see them written on the screen, and her pregnancy test was negative. So, what about her physical exam? She appeared well, no acute distress. Her HENT exam, I won't go into detail, but it was completely normal. Her neuro exam was normal. So basically, the physical exam was normal.
So thank you, Susan.
So now back to you, Jessica.
Thank you, Susan. We appreciate going through that case again. So here we have a case with Cheyenne, very typical of what we see in a patient who presents with migraine. Generally a normal exam, a long history of having headaches that are disabling, and those headaches have associated symptoms. And you can see in Cheyenne's case, she has some light sensitivity, which you could almost miss if you didn't pay close attention to her history. Another very important feature is that the headache is so disabling that it's causing her not only to miss work, but she prefers to not move around and kind of rest when she's having one of these attacks. Let's take a walk through the diagnostic criteria for migraine. When we take a look at migraine, we really split it into two large buckets, migraine without aura and migraine with aura. To make the diagnosis of migraine, we generally rely on an international classification system called the ICHD. We're on its third version, so it's called the ICHD-3. And it takes a look at features in migraine that relate to pain and the associated symptoms of migraine, and a person must have some of each in order to meet criteria. So when we take a look at migraine without aura, which is the more common type of migraine to have, and this occurs in about 70% of people with migraine, you can see that in a person's lifetime, you have to have at least 5 attacks that untreated, that's very important, untreated, which most people will treat when they come in to see you with something from over the counter. So you really want to ask them, if you didn't treat or hadn't treated, how long would this attack last? And the attacks can last up to 3 days without treatment. They will have at least two of the following pain features. The pain can be one-sided, pulsating or throbbing, moderate or severe in intensity, untreated, and then can be made worse with physical activity. So a person only needs two of these features for pain, and then needs at least one of these features when it comes to associated symptoms to make the diagnosis: nausea or vomiting, or light and sound sensitivity. For migraine with aura, which we can see in about 30% of people with migraine, you have to have at least two attacks of neurological symptom that often will occur prior to the onset of head pain. Sometimes it can eke into the start of actual migraine attacks, so it can be a little bit hard to make the diagnosis if a person continues to have their aura symptom when the migraine pain starts as well. Most people will have visual symptoms. This occurs in about 90% of those that have migraine with aura, but you can have other symptoms as well. For example, trouble with your speech, where you're all of a sudden having speech arrest, or jarbling of words, where a person will describe they know exactly what they want to say, but they can't get the words out right, and they don't quite make sense. They might have trouble with numbness or tingling, often starting around the mouth and in the face, and then traveling down the arm and then into the leg. They might even have symptoms of motor weakness, where a person will actually become hemiplegic on one side of the body. Usually a person with aura will have the same symptoms every time they have aura. And often if a person has aura, they only have one neurological symptom. There are some cases where a person can develop multiple neurological symptoms. It's important to note that each symptom should last no more than 60 minutes. And one aura symptom will usually resolve before the next one starts. So this is a little different than stroke, where all the symptoms tend to happen at the same time. In migraine, one will start and stop, the next will start and stop, then the next will start and stop. Of course, very hard for a person to tell you this when they're experiencing an aura. It's extremely frightening for them. They might be very worried there's something else going on. But if you're able to really take that history, I think it really helps all of us feel more comfortable that this might be aura rather than a stroke. So let's pause for a moment again and reflect back on Cheyenne's case. So let's discuss this question when thinking about her case. We think Cheyenne has migraine. Which of the following is an appropriate assessment to administer for Cheyenne? A, the GAD-7, B, HIT-6, C, the ICHD-3 criteria, or D, the MMSE? So here the correct answer would be B, the HIT-6. The HIT-6 is a headache screening questionnaire that actually takes a look at disability. Let's actually go to the next slide and take a look at some of the questions that are asked in HIT-6. Here you can see that we're asking questions about when a person is having headache, how much it's impacting their life. It's the headache impact test. And when you put all these questions together, you can total a score, and based on the score, get a very good sense how disabled this person is. So, Susan, do you have any comments about the HIT-6? Do you use this in your practice often? Do you feel like it can be an effective tool to really see how a patient is doing?
Yes, I do, Jessica. I admit that we're going to also be talking about the MIDAS. I tend to use the MIDAS disability more often. I'm just more comfortable with it. And I think for those listening, I don't think you need to do both. The HIT-6 is six questions, as you can see. You add up the score, and it really focuses on how disabled have you been by your headaches over the last 4 weeks. And as we can see here for Cheyenne, a score of 62, it's pretty impactful. So that's just what I tend to do, Jessica. I tend to use the MIDAS more than the HIT-6, but they're both very good diagnostic tools to look at someone's disability.
The MIDAS, Susan, what time period does that take a look at?
It's actually, it's 12 weeks.
Yeah.
And I think I like that better because often I'm seeing a patient every 12 weeks, roughly every 3 months. So then it gives me a window in how have they been doing for those 3 months prior to this follow-up visit. But again, I think they're both good validated tools. So in this case, Jessica, if we look at Cheyenne's Midas, because you saw the hit six was very high at 62. And when you score the Midas, you look at the, if you look at the five questions, you're looking at things like how many, you know, the last 3 months, so roughly 12 weeks, how many days did she completely miss work or school? And I like the second question when you're asking, how about productivity reduced by at least 50%? Because again, we know many people with migraine, they still go to work or school, but they're not 100%. So I really like it because it's looking at that level of disability. So basically you total up the five questions. In her case, her score is 15.
So let's take a moment on that, knowing that the Midas score for Cheyenne was 15, and let's ask the audience a question. What is the most accurate interpretation of Cheyenne's Midas score of 15? Does that mean she has A, grade 1, little or no disability, B, grade 2, mild disability, C, grade 3, moderate disability, or D, grade 4, severe disability? So as you can see here, a score of 15 brings us to moderate disability. So the correct answer is C. And as Susan mentioned, in clinical practice, using a HIT 6 or a MIDAS can really be a preference thing. You can also really just ask your patient how disabled they feel like they've been over the last time period since your last visit with them. And very quickly, you're going to get a pretty solid answer. I've been missing a lot of work. I've been taking a lot of time away from my family. I'm getting in trouble by my boss. My spouse is really getting frustrated. I feel like I'm not a good friend. I feel like I'm not a good community member. I hear all of these things. And so if you feel overstressed by the idea of using one of these kinds of tools, asking these simple questions of your patient will give you a very good answer. If you do have the time to use these tools before the patient even comes back to your clinical exam room, it really provides you a way to follow how the patient is doing over time. And also a couple of good things to have in your chart. If you're ever questioned by insurance, I find, about how disabled the patient really is, you have your information right there from these types of scales and tools. So I wanted to take a moment before we moved on to the rest of our discussion to talk a little bit about cultural humility in migraine care. And I think talking about cultural humility is important across every aspect of medicine. Considering our case, and I think Cheyenne brought up some really nice points about how she felt about taking medication, how she was very spiritual and connected and felt that her attacks might be a representation of negative environment around her. This might not be something you're comfortable with as a healthcare provider, but it's extremely important that to understand that all of our patients are coming from different cultural backgrounds, different individual beliefs, and understanding and listening is one of the best things that we can do, because it's important that we hear our patients and that we help use that information to develop a plan of care, to understand what their goals are. And it really helps to recognize not using our own biases and projecting them on the patient, but understand where our patients are coming from and how different cultures and different backgrounds are going to represent symptoms in a different way, and trying to meet our patients at a point where they can really communicate in a very comfortable manner with us and we can understand what their goals and expectations are. That's where we're going to be able to help them make the best decisions for themselves. So Dr. Hutchinson, can you go through some important aspects of cultural humility and how we might understand both different cultures and different patients at the individual levels in the next couple of slides?
Absolutely. And this is such an important topic, Jessica. And I know I used to think, well, you know, I don't have any problems with that. But I realized, no, you know, we each have our own unique background. And I think one of the most important things to do is just listen and understand that not everyone has the same background. We may be listening, and what a patient's telling us doesn't really resonate with what we would have done or what we've seen. So again, this culture attitude towards pain can really vary very widely. And I think even as clinicians, there is implicit bias, and it's unintentional. You know, I don't think we mean to, but probably unintentionally, we may be judging when patients tell us they do certain things. And so I think for us to be aware that, gosh, let's be careful what's happening in that room with the patient. Hopefully we're not judging them, we're being open, we're listening, and just hopefully understanding more about, okay, is there a difference based on their age, their abilities, their gender, their culture, their language? Because very importantly, studies suggest that marginalized communities with migraine, including Black, Hispanic, and Indigenous populations in the United States, they may be distrustful of the medical community. And unfortunately, they're less likely to then be adequately treated for pain, receive a diagnosis, or receive quality care. So in terms of understanding different cultures, for those of you listening, you might consider taking the implicit association test called IAT from Project Implicit to identify implicit biases that you may have. And as I recall, I did this several years ago myself, and it was actually very insightful. It's a way to challenge yourself to then meet and engage with those who are not like you, learn more about other cultures, focusing on listening and that empathy development, but also just quite frankly acknowledging that we may not know enough about a patient's culture, beliefs, and lived experience. And so it might be a call to action to learn more, to reach out and learn more about that person's culture and the background. And I'm very happy to know about this resource called Guides to Culture, Customs, and Etiquette for 80-plus Country, free resources that are developed to provide useful information for conducting business. And again, it's 80 different countries. So again, I think the goal again for us as clinicians is seek to understand, but do not make assumptions. Understanding different patient explanatory models, here's some sample questions. I know that different people have different ways of understanding illness. Please help me understand how you see things. What do you call your problem? Or what name does it have for you? What do you think caused this problem? Why do you think it started when it did? What does your illness do to you, and how does it work? How severe is it, and will it have a short or long course or duration? What do you fear most about this illness? What are the chief problems this has caused for you? What kind of treatment do you think you should receive? What are the most important results you hope to achieve from treatment? And boy, I look at these questions, Jessica, and I think, wow, they're open-ended to an extent, and you're really trying to, I think, create an open atmosphere in asking the patient and really trying to better understand where they're coming from. So for me, this is a call to action to be more aware of these questions in my own practice.
Yeah, I think they're excellent questions. I think they really open dialogue. And if I were to have somebody ask these of me, I know they would automatically make me feel, huh, this person really wants to know what I'm thinking. And I mean, there's always the risk you worry that, oh, is this person going to tell me, I don't know, doctor, you're the doctor. But I find when you ask questions like this, it really shows that you care about what the person's thinking and you're trying to level that we're on the same level here. You know, I'm here for you. I want to help you, but I want to know what's important to you. And that's really the language that is being used. And I think it's nice. It's a nice way to start that dialogue.
What comes to mind, Jessica, is we often hear this at some of our headache meetings. When someone with a headache comes in, it's not just the headache, it's the person with the headache.
Yeah, excellent point. So let's now revisit Cheyenne after we've established her diagnosis, and we're now starting to think about treatment.
Okay, Cheyenne, so that we've discussed this more and figured out the nature of your migraine attacks, we can discuss treatment. We do have several options to consider. For medications, there are preventive treatments that you take daily to reduce the frequency of migraines. We could also consider acute treatments that you take when you feel a migraine coming on.
Yeah, I like the idea of not taking something every day, but I also like the sound of having something that is helping me all the time and maybe helps them not be as bad when they happen. I'm not sure.
Right, understandable. So the newer class of medications, CGRP inhibitors, or receptor antagonist block the CGRP molecule in the body that research has found plays a big role in migraine attacks. There are some CGRP medications just for acute relief. There are infusion therapies. There is administered every several weeks, and there's oral therapies, and there's also a nasal spray for acute use.
I see. I think since I have so many migraines, I would like to try and take something regular and see how that works. And I would prefer a pill instead of having to come in somewhere for an IV.
I understand. So atogepant is a preventive oral medication that is taken once every day. And it's actually also approved for what we call chronic migraine in addition to episodic migraine. While it sounds like you may still meet the criteria for episodic migraine, which is fewer than 15 days per month, about half the time you have a headache and some moderate disability that's been happening because of that. Rimegepant is another option as well that is taken every other day, although it is approved for both acute use and prevention of episodic migraine only.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, you're right. I would say that I've had migraine-like headaches for about half the days of the month the last few months. I've not been talking about it much, but it's had a real impact.
Okay, so let's take a pause and test our knowledge of CGRP receptor antagonists before we move on to the discussion of these treatments. So according to the latest position statement from the American Headache Society, which of the following can be considered as a first-line treatment for prevention of episodic migraine? Rimegepant, A, ubrogepant, B, ibuprofen, C, or olmesartan, D? Okay, so the answer here would be A, rimegepant. It is a CGRP receptor antagonist approved for the preventive treatment of episodic migraine. A bit confusing sometimes because it's also approved for the acute treatment of migraine, and it's one of the few, actually probably the only, that can be flipped back and forth between acute and preventive treatment. Ubrogepant is approved for acute treatment of migraine. Same with ibuprofen, can be used for acute treatment of migraine. And olmesartan is not one of the first line treatments that we consider for migraine prevention. If this had said D, candesartan, that is one of our first line options. So a little difference in the ARB, but that difference does mean a big deal. So let's start our discussion about the CGRP receptor antagonist. And I want to remind our audience, we're really going to focus on prevention during this discussion. We know that there are four available CGRP receptor antagonists, as we can see on the slide, but only two that are indicated for prevention of migraine, both atogepant and rimegepant. I mentioned the American Headache Society consensus statement and also its newest update. So let's just discuss that a little bit. Here we can see the position statement update that was published in 2024. And what it shows us here, what we're highlighting, is diagnosis of both episodic and chronic migraine. So episodic migraine is the majority of people with migraine. They have episodes of attacks that can occur anywhere from a few times every other month or a few times a year, all the way up to about 14 days a month. If a patient has headaches at least 15 days a month with migraine attacks at least 8 of those 15 days, they transition into the diagnosis of chronic migraine. So that's just a difference between the two. Treatments are slightly different between these two categories, so it's really important to make that diagnosis. Rituximab and divalproic are recommended for both as our beta blockers as one of the first line treatments and candesartan. One important difference is for chronic migraine, you can use onobotulinum toxin A, which is not indicated at this time for episodic migraine. Just an important thing to point out as one of the first line treatments, this updated statement shows you that the CGRP targeted treatments, whether they're the CGRP receptor antagonists that are oral tablets or the CGRP monoclonal antibodies, are now considered one of the options for first line treatment. Let's talk about some of the data for these CGRP receptor antagonists. So rimegepant was first approved in 2020 for the acute treatment of migraine based on a phase 3 trial. There was a separate trial that was looked at for the prevention of migraine, where 75 milligrams of rimegepant oral dissolvable tablet was given every other day to patients, and in a 3-month time period, patients had a reduction of number of migraine days. And you can see here that reduction was 4.3 days compared to placebo, where it was 3.5 days, and this change was statistically significant. The second preventive option that was approved for the prevention of migraine was atogepant. Now, atogepant was actually studied for both the prevention of episodic migraine, where there's 3 doses available, 10 milligrams, 30 milligrams, and 60 milligrams. And it was also then later studied for the prevention of chronic migraine, where at market, we are only have come out with the 60 milligram once a day dose, even though there was a 30 milligram twice a day dose that was studied, but it hasn't been brought to market. So it's important to note here we have data for chronic migraine, and we can see with the dose of 60 milligrams that there was a reduction of 6.9 days versus placebo at 5.1 days. And we could see in the atogepant pivotal trials for episodic migraine, reduction was of about 2 days less compared to placebo. So again, statistically significant. So let's go back to our case and think about our follow-up with Cheyenne and some other considerations for her care. So Susan, what do you think about, you had mentioned when talking to Cheyenne, the idea of using a medication like atogepant. You know, where would this come out in clinical practice? What would make you think about this? And particularly in Cheyenne, why would we consider something like atogepant or even maybe even rimegepant for prevention?
Yeah, great, great points, Jessica. So I think going back to our case, Cheyenne, as everyone may recall, she is not doing well. Her HIT 6 is high, her vitus indicates some disability. So the way I look at it, and she was open to this, is, boy, as wonderful as acute treatment is, wouldn't it be better to try to prevent the disability in her headache days in the first place? So again, circling back to Jessica, based on ruling out other conditions, we need to make sure that we're comfortable that the diagnosis is migraine. And for the sake of this discussion in this case, yes, we become comfortable that it's migraine. She likely has migraine. It could be chronic migraine, although not all of her headache days seem to meet criteria for full migraine. So some of the follow-up care considerations, remember she is a female, we need to think about pregnancy intentions. Not just are they pregnant now, are they trying to get pregnant? Are they thinking about getting pregnant in 6 months? That's going to make a difference on your treatment. With GPANS, we just don't have enough data yet, so you need to counsel for that for pregnancy issues and evaluate the need for alternative treatment if a pregnancy is planned. And we need to look at what is she currently doing for contraception. You remember she was on an oral contraceptive pill that she stopped taking. So we need to make sure there's effective birth control in place. That's going to make a difference on what we can recommend for her. We also need to review her current level of anxiety, particularly if you're looking at her in a more holistic way, because remember she went off of her escitalopram 10 milligram. We need to assess, is there any need for treatment there? And certainly we want to schedule follow-up appointments to monitor whatever we decide to do. We need to monitor ongoing frequency, severity. Maybe doing a HIT 6 or a MIDAS is what we're doing helping, going over the prescription medication. And I think what's really underdone is the need to coordinate with other healthcare providers. We don't know yet, but we need to find out, you know, does she have a primary care provider? Does she have a separate gynecologist? Does she have a psychologist? Who is part of her care team? Because I think it's so important to have that collaboration. Otherwise, you could have, you know, one provider doing one thing, another provider doing the other, and then the patient gets confused and kind of lost in the middle. Certainly, we want to recommend a headache diary and having Cheyenne track her ongoing triggers. Providing information, I think, is so important because some of our patients, maybe they don't have access to some of these name brand prescription medications. Maybe they don't have good commercial insurance. And these medications do have, there is access using patient assistance programs that we need to be aware of in order to really be the provider that this many of our patients need. So here's the bottom line. Based on migraine characteristics, and we discussed patient preferences, Cheyenne and her provider agree on an etogestrel ethinyl estradiol. Basically, it's the contraceptive vaginal ring. And this would be her desired means of birth control. And then atogepant, which we just learned about, for preventive treatment of migraine.
So these are all important points to bring up about the case. And Susan's already brought up the idea of a team-based approach for management of migraine. And again, just to remind our audience, this team-based approach puts the patient and their caregivers at the center. And it's just important to recognize who is in that team. If this is the primary care provider, who's the psychologist? If they're seeing a neurologist or headache specialist, who's that person? Who's going to be in charge of which prescriptions, and, you know, making sure that everybody is in communication and also is not trying to duplicate measures and put too many medications on at the same time. And also important is, again, as Susan mentioned, the gynecologist, who will be, I think, a big role in many of the women who have migraine. So let's now summarize our discussion with our SMART goals, which are specific, measurable, attainable, and relevant and timely. These major points are what we hope you're going to be taking from this presentation to apply to practice. So use validated screening tools and diagnostic aids in the primary care or women's health practice setting to assess for migraine. Incorporate the latest knowledge on the role of CGRP in migraine and updated professional guidance into shared decision-making process with the patient. Today's CMEO briefcase is just one of our three-part series of activities. I hope you'll check out the other two activities in this series. We have a foundational activity, and then we also have another patient case activity that's set in the emergency department. And thank you to CMEO.
Thank you all.